ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्री नारद उवाच। गृहस्वस्थितो राजन् क्रियकुर्वन् यथोचितः वासुदेवपनं साक्षात् उपासित महामुनि।
यू डू
Narada Uvacha. Sri Narada Muni replied. Griheshu Avastita. Oh, Griheshu, at home. Avastita, staying. A householder generally stays home with his wife and children. Rajam, O king. Kriya, activities. Kurvan, performing. Yathochita, suitable, as instructed by the guru and shastra. Vasudev, unto Lord Vasudev. Arpanam, dedicating. Sakshat, directly. Upasita, should worship. Mahamunin, the great devotees. Narad Muni replied, my dear king, those who stay at home as householders must act to earn their livelihood. And instead of trying to enjoy the results of their works themselves, they should offer these results to Krishna, Vasudev. How to satisfy Vasudev in this life can be perfectly understood through the association of great devotees of the Lord. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The format for Grihastha life should be dedication to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita 6:1, it is said, Anasrita karma phalang karyam karma karoti jaha sasanyasi chijogi cha na niragnir na chakriha. One who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as he is obligated, is in the renounced order of life, and he is the true mystic, not he who lights no fire and performs no work. Whether one acts as a Brahmin, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, or Sannyasi, he must act only for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev, Krishna, the son of Vasudev. This should be the principle for everyone's life. Narad Muni has already described the principles of life for a brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyasi, and now he is describing how a grihastha should live. The basic principle is to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The science of satisfying the Supreme Lord can be learned as described here, Sakshad Upasita Mahamunin. The word Mahamunin refers to great saintly persons or devotees. Yes, this is one of the purposes of Prabhupada's coming to this world. I'll tell you it's a famous story about Prabhupada coming to this world. Listen carefully. It was 1975 and I had left Mayapur to come to Los Angeles to make a collecting party for driving. We used to drive around in vans with some brahmacharis and go from town to town, city to city, collecting for different reasons. So I wanted to have a party for collecting for Mayapur. So I came to Los Angeles. Prabhupada arrived the next day. And he saw me and, you know, acknowledged me. And there were other devotees, of course, there greeting Prabhupada. That evening, is this clear? Because I have hearing aids and everything is woo 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 woo. Is it clear what I'm saying? As long as it's clear, I'll tolerate all the ringing. So, that evening, early evening, most of the devotees went out on Sankirtan on Hollywood Boulevard or Sunset Boulevard or somewhere like that. And I was staying in an apartment just opposite the temple. ISKCON owned some apartment houses. And I was looking out the big window at the temple, trying to think, how can I get up to see Prabhupada? He was upstairs in his quarters. How can I get up there to see Prabhupada? Thinking. I remember the evening perfectly. It was just dusk. And Venus, the evening star, was there over the hills. It was glittering. Suddenly, Upendra came out and he saw me in the window. He was in front of the temple courtyard. And he went like this. And I went downstairs. He said, Prabhupada wants to see you. So that was nice. Prabhupada fulfilled my desire. And so I ran up the stairs to Prabhupada's quarters, and Upendra and I were sitting in his room, and Prabhupada was, he had a nice pillow and back round pillows with a big tassel. You know a tassel? You know what a tassel is? Huh? Yeah, but is there a Hindi word for it? It's like a sika on the end of a pillow. It hangs down, dangles. Thank you. So Prabhupada was playing with it. He was wrapping it around and around and around his finger. And he said, He asked me how Mayapur was. I gave my report on Mayapur. And he said, "You know, I often wonder what is the..." He was looking at his quarters, which I had decorated for him in 1970. White floor and blue walls and orange, burnt orange curtains and a little chandelier. And it was nice. It was not opulent, not marble. We couldn't afford marble. But that was only a dream, a marble temple like this. That was all a dream. But anyway, we did the best we could. And Prabhupada was sitting there. He said, "I was wondering..." "What is the difference between me and the Goswamis?" He said, "They had their books. I have my books. Each night they slept under a different tree." He's still playing with the tassel. He said, "Each night I can sleep in a different palace." He's talking about all his quarters around the world. He said, "So there's really no difference." He said, "When I was a grihastha," he said, "I used to like to visit my Guru Maharaj at the Gaudiya Math in Mayapur." He said, "But it was very difficult for me," he said, "because if I spent the night, I had to sleep in the room with all the brahmacharis on chokis." He didn't like that. He didn't like sleeping with a lot of other brahmacharis. Their noses worked. They snored. Prabhupada called it nose working. He didn't like snoring. He said, "So it was very uncomfortable for me, but I tolerated it for the association of my Guru Maharaj." He said, "You know..." This is the important part. Well, it's all important, but this is the ultra important part. He said, "I didn't want to come here." He said, "Krishna said to me, 'You come down and write those books.'" And I said, "No, no." He said, "I don't want to go there. It is a horrible place." Krishna said, "Don't mind. I will take care of everything. You come down and write those books." Do you understand what I just said? Probably it was like, whoa. The atmosphere. Upendra was sitting... I was sitting at the side of Prabhupada's desk, and Upendra was sitting against the far wall. His mouth was open. Whoa. The first time... and really only time, except for my spiritual complexion is reddish gold, that I ever heard Prabhupada refer to the fact that he is not from this world. "I do not want to go there. It is..." and Prabhupada would say horrible, "horrible. It is a horrible place. No, no, don't you worry. I will take care of everything. You come down and write those books." So Prabhupada was relating it to nice quarters that he had. Not opulent like this, but nice, everything clean. How he didn't want to come here, but he came here on the request of Krishna with the sole purpose of writing the Bhaktivedanta purports for the purpose of what? instructing all of us in how to live in this horrible place called the material world. You shake your head, but actually, the problem is most of us don't think it's a horrible place. That's the problem. We don't think it's a horrible place. We think, wow, this is great. Maybe heavenly planets is nicer. You know, I used to think, well, you know, I wouldn't mind stopping off at a heavenly planet just to see what it's like. I used to think like that. Maybe I still do. I don't know. But this is like beyond a heavenly planet. The opulence. How Prabhupada designed this center to perfectly fit with the mentality of the Bombaywalas. The people of Bombay love this temple. Why? Gold, marble, opulence, you know, great, beautiful deities, opulently dressed. And of course, you know, to see your eyes roll up like that is not a pleasant view. But we'll try and stay awake. I was, again, at a Bhagavatam class in Los Angeles, 1970. Vishnu Jhana was, and Prabhupada said, don't sleep. And Vishnu Jhana said, I wasn't asleep, Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada said, when your eyes are closed and your head is like this, he said, you're asleep. Yeah, okay, yes, sir. I know it's difficult. I have a friend, devotee friend, I won't mention his name, but he said something funny. He said, when I have difficulty getting to sleep, he said, I open the Bhagavatam, and within 2 seconds I'm sound asleep. So, the Bhagavatam is not meant to be a soporific or something which puts you to sleep, but because of the modes of nature that we're all under, it works that way. Maya attacks us. But actually, we should be fully alert. I think I told this story yesterday also. The mode of ignorance is so strong that I was in New York, 55th Street Temple, and I was at the Bhagavatam class. I won't mention who was giving the Bhagavatam class. But as he's reading the purport, Prabhupada's purport. He fell asleep during his own class. I said to Achyutananda, wow, this is a really interesting class, isn't it? It's so boring, he's put himself to sleep. So, you know, Maya can attack us. But, the important thing, the science of satisfying the Supreme Lord can be learned here from the Munis, from the learned, and from the self-realized souls. And especially from the pure, perfectly pure devotees who have come here specifically to teach low-class people like us how to satisfy and please Krishna. In the Kali Yuga, everyone is low-born. Everyone. And Prabhupada came here to this horrible place to try to elevate anyone who was even in the slight bit interested how to satisfy Krishna. Because without pleasing Krishna, without satisfying Krishna, we have no hope. There's no hope for us. We have to satisfy Krishna. That should be our what is that line in Abhya Akilatmika Buddhi. Isn't that it? Single-pointed determination. Single-pointed focus. How to please Krishna. One way to please Krishna, we have been taught, is to please the Guru. Whoever your Guru may be. And your Guru, of course, everything I'm saying, Prabhupada had big plans for ISKCON. That ISKCON... Jeez. ISKCON would be the dominant religious society of the world. He had no interest in, what is that called? Interfaith discussion. He had no interest in that. They wanted him to go to some interfaith, ecumenical discussion, discourse. There would be a rabbi and a Protestant priest and a Muslim and a Catholic. And Prabhupada said, yes, I will go and I will declare one book, he said. He went like this. One book, Bhagavad Gita. One flag, ISKCON. One God, Krishna. He said, that is our ecumenicalism. That is our interfaith. Everyone should unite under the flag of ISKCON. How important ISKCON is, even though we don't see it, perhaps as being very terribly influential in the course of world events today, if we keep it safe, in the future, if everything goes according to plan, maybe not in our lifetime, not certainly not in mine, and maybe not even in yours, but ISKCON will be the uniting factor for the world. This is one of the reasons Prabhupada came here. Therefore, he said, ISKCON is my body, right? ISKCON is my body. You want association with the great Muni, with the great sadhus, with the great pure devotee, then you stay within ISKCON, because this is within the body on a esoteric level, within the body of Prabhupada. And of course, there's room enough to get under the lotus feet. There's room for everyone. There's room for the whole world. You know, like Bali Maharaj, he promised 3 steps of land to Vamanadeva. I'm so absorbed in my coughing, I can't remember anything. To Vamanadeva. So he took one. You all know the story. He took one, he took two. And where else could he put his third? Bigfoot. Bali Maharaj offered his head. So there's room enough for unlimited Bali Maharajas, unlimited Bombay Wallahs, unlimited Americans, unlimited Canadians, everyone can fit under the lotus feet of Prabhupada. Of course, we were all very competitive when we were all younger in ISKCON because we didn't think that there was room. So we were competing who could get the mercy. We didn't realize the mercy was unlimited. Unlimited mercy coming from Prabhupada. Of course, Prabhupada liked competition. In his room in Calcutta, he said to us, competition is good. He said, when I was a child, my family, I used to compete with my brothers and sisters for competition, who could get the attention of our parents. He said, and in Vrindavan, the cowherd boys competed. Who can touch Krishna first? They'd have a race. Of course, whoever touched Krishna first, whoever came second, was not angry. Oh, look, you've touched Krishna first. You're so fortunate. They weren't angry or envious, but they were appreciative that you beat me in the race and you got to touch Krishna first. That's such a wonderful thing. So that's transcendental competition, not mundane competition, where you run for the president. I heard that they just had a presidential election in America. So when the woman who was running for president, she was in her headquarters. When she heard that she lost, she turned on her party campaign managers and threw a plate at them and was angry and swearing and cursing and hitting them. Not like that. That's not, devotees are not losers like that. That's called in America, sore loser. But rather, we're appreciative of someone else's service. When someone excels, oh, Prabhu, you have excelled, you're doing such great service. That way, we don't have any headbutting, you know, where you butt heads like a sheep or a ram. When rams, male sheep, when they fight, they put their heads down and they run at each other, boom, and they butt heads. We're not like that. We're appreciative because we all want to get the mercy of Prabhupada, because Prabhupada has come here to instruct, just like he says in this purport, how to please Krishna. That is the purpose of ISKCON. When you're out preaching and distributing books, this is pleasing to Krishna, and you are helping Prabhupada to fulfill his mission. Especially you're preaching, most of you are preaching when you're out in the streets. They're all grihasthas. Pretty much the whole world is grihasthas. Very few. Very few brahmacharis. Brahmachari life is, no one can understand it. What? You go without sex? It's difficult for people to comprehend such a thing. But there is room for grihastha life. Not griha maybe, but grihastha. So you're distributing books with the Bhaktivedanta purports is to some griha medhi will read a purport and realize, oh, I should become a grihastha, one who works, has family, but the goal of their work and their family is to please Krishna. At the moment, Krishna's not happy with us. Not that he's sitting there, you know, very unhappy. He's enjoying, like anything, with his friends and his parents and the cows. But he is given over the overseeing of us to Durga. Durga, she's the master of the material nature. Another definition of Durga is fortress or prison. So this is an amazing thing that Durga has created a prison with no bars. If you go to a prison house anywhere in the world, the big bars on the window, you can't get out. The door is locked with bars. The windows are locked with bars. You can't get out. You're stuck in that room. But Durga's prison, the windows are open, the big doors are open. No one wants to leave. What kind of wonderful prison is that? A prison where the doors are open, but no one wants to leave. We would rather stay here because we're conditioned to thinking that suffering is pleasure. It's just madness. And the only way we can understand that, and the only way we can understand what real pleasure is and how we are suffering is through Prabhupada's purports, which again is the only reason he came here. He did not want to come here. It is a horrible place. Try telling that to Mr. Ambani at the top of his skyscraper house. Yesterday I was seeing, God, a helicopter is going back and forth, back and forth. I was thinking, into how many times can Mr. Ambani or Mr. Tata go back and forth to the airport? Everyone's active, 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 trying to make a comfortable situation for themselves in a sewer. In a dirty place. Everyone's working to, oh, now I'm comfortable. But you're living in a dirty place. No matter how high or how big your house is, or how many cars you have, you're still in a dirty place. It is an impure place. It is, in essence, the material world is not impure. But by our association with it, we make it impure. By our own desires, which are in conflict, our desires as conditioned souls, we are in conflict with Krishna's desire. And Krishna, by his love and his mercy, he sends or requests his pure associates to come down. You notice he said, come down. And instruct the conditioned, suffering souls who don't even know they're suffering in the science of Krishna consciousness, which is how to please Krishna. Without which, you can't be a brahmachari, you can't be a sannyasi, you can't be a vanaprastha, you can't be a grihastha. Even though you may dress like that, if you don't please Krishna, and don't please Krishna's devotee, maybe it's these, then you're just a fallen soul. Of course, it's good to think that you're fallen, even you're in, I'm a fallen soul. That there's no doubt in my mind, at least, that I'm a fallen soul, a wretched soul. Because even after 78 years or 48 years, January of being a devotee, I'm still not Krishna conscious. So that's wretched, you know. But anyway, perhaps you'll all do better than me. I hope so. I hope so. My prayers and wishes are that all of you can become Krishna conscious today, this minute, this moment. You can become Krishna conscious like that. All it requires, surrender. Surrender your body, surrender your mind, surrender your intelligence, and allow your soul to blossom within and manifest the intelligence and the knowledge and the realization of Prabhupada's instructions, how to please Krishna. Now that was a good story, huh? True story. You come down and write those books. That says it all. So these are not ordinary purports. At all. They are specifically meant for the people of this age who cannot understand anything. They don't know who they are. They don't know where they are. They don't know what's going on. Everyone, that's called bewildered. Everyone is bewildered. And Prabhupada has given these verses. The purports are specifically written in a way that we can understand the verse. You, where have you been? I haven't seen you in years. Are you at New Mumbai? How important Krishna consciousness is, how important your service is in preaching. That we chant that verse all the time, that Prabhupada, we ask Prabhupada, is there some other prayer that we can chant besides Nama Om Vishnu Padaya? And Prabhupada wrote that, Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvise Shunyavari Paskacha Desatarine. Prabhupada wrote that himself. There is the whole purpose of his coming, to preach the glories of Lord Chaitanya and to defeat the Mayavadis, the Sunyavadis. We have to understand that we're not just, you know, just blunt, dull senses chanting some words. We have to understand those words. Prabhupada wrote that prayer himself, and it described in essence the whole purpose of his life. Okay. Anyway, good verse, good purports, always. Does anyone have any questions? One book, one flag, one God.
But Prabhupada was also very keen to bring people on board without disturbing them. Even though they have a different view, but he was able to extend himself to accommodate them.
Yes, he did. Prabhupada extended himself to accommodate, but never backed down. I was listening to one conversation between Prabhupada and a Jesuit priest in Melbourne. And Prabhupada just very graciously, completely takes apart the man's arguments. He praises Jesus as a pure devotee who suffered so much but was still said on the cross, "Please forgive them, they don't know what they do." But he just, yeah.
So Prabhupada wrote a letter to the Pope in those days. Letter to Pope, Pope, Vatican, Vatican, Pope. He wrote a letter saying, wherever we have common ground, we can work together.
Yes, he was always open. He even gave a letter to the Ford Foundation. He gave a letter and a talk outside the United Nations. He was always looking for an opportunity to bring people together under the banner, ultimately, under the banner, ultimately, even though he may give them some credence at the time. The ultimate goal was to bring them all together under the banner of ISKCON. Preaching is a very delicate thing. You can't offend, but you can't back down either.
So, he was a good negotiator. He was a good negotiator. He knows where to give in and where to pull back.
Yes, he was expert.
So, he didn't compromise, but he was willing to go some distance with them. He was willing to go with them some distance.
Some distance. Do you do ecumenical preaching?
Huh?
Do you do interfaith preaching?
Well, I attended many seminars on that. Seminars on that.
But no, there's no harm. But this one particular time, that's what he said. He was not interested to go to this conference. He said, "I will go, but this is what I will preach." One book, Bhagavad Gita. One flag, ISKCON. One God, Krishna.
He wrote that in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita at the end. Introduction to Bhagavad Gita, at the end he wrote that. Everybody wants that, he said. Everybody wants this, but they don't know. They want it, but they don't know how to do that.
Yeah, but you have to be very expert to convince them without offending them.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Water for you to drink. Would you like to have
No, water won't help. But thank you. Maybe I'm dying. Or maybe. I'm definitely dying. Are there any other questions, sir? Anyone? Any question of any kind you just ask.
Krishna, you told many pastimes regarding Prabhupada meeting with devotees. And Prabhupada used to talk with external people.
Go ahead, ask your question, someone will tell me what he said.
So, when external people used to come, intimate Bodo, we are very close to the side. मतलब प्रभुपाद बाहर के लोगों से कैसे बात करते थे उनका कोई एग्जांपल है मतलब बड़े लोग डेलीगेट मिलने आते थे
That's a very hard question because Prabhupada had that extra quality that none of us had, which was... I'm saying, it's a very hard question because Prabhupada had that extra quality that none of us had, which was purity. I think I explained here yesterday, Krishna's all attractive, and Krishna's representative, who's perfect and pure, like Prabhupada, he manifests 78% of Krishna's qualities. So Krishna's all attractive, so the pure devotee is also all attractive. and he had Prabhupada had a deep intelligence, very deep and profound, but not everyone responded. Some, he said, they have cow dung in their heads. He would say their heads are full of cow dung, they can't understand. But if you have a little bit of piety, at least, then Prabhupada was able to make some inroad into your ear. It was kind of like a mystical, magical thing, but not really mystical or magical, just for us, kind of unattainable, because that ability to convince people came from Prabhupada's total surrender to Krishna. His purity, total surrender. And that total surrender is an active thing. It's not some dull thing. It's an active energy that you're manifesting an ability. And so when you're speaking, we always had this faith that when Prabhupada spoke, Krishna was speaking. Not that Prabhupada was Krishna. I love this. Right on time. Again. In my room, whenever the bell rings, I look at the clock. Right on time. That's excellent management. All glories to the managers of the Hare Krishna Land Mandir. Radha Ras Bihariji. So it was purity. So he was able to charm. He charmed everyone. He was great, not charmed like that, but he was gracious. He was a gentleman. Anyone who met Prabhupada, whether they were convinced of Krishna consciousness or not, they never forgot him. I met your Swami, I met your Guru on the plane, I met him in the airport, I met him on the street. Businessmen, businesswomen, people from all walks of life who happened, I saw him walking on the beach. They remember. And little do they know that that's the beginning of their spiritual life. Maybe not in this life, but in their next life, again, they'll have an opportunity to come into the association of Krishna's devotees. That's how it works. Even by just walking down the beach, people jogging by, I saw Prabhupada would walk on Santa Monica Beach, and there are people jogging, running in the sand, their morning exercise. And Prabhupada would walk by with all the devotees, and they'd stop and turn around and look. Prabhupada brought all of them to a halt. They'd stop and look. Wow, who is that? Everyone remembers. He was all attractive, like Krishna. So I don't know how he did it, but he did it. And a good thing for you in your preaching is when you're talking to someone, you say, Srila Prabhupada says, and then you speak. That gives it an extra punch. Srila Prabhupada says. What? Do you do that? No. Okay, any other question?
Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada said that
we have to apply our intelligence and we have to organize ourselves for taking this movement ahead. Apply our intelligence and organize. These two things are required. So already Prabhupada has given the process.
Hold on. What does he say?
He's telling, Prabhupada says, apply your intelligence and organize to take this one forward.
Okay.
So how we can best apply this instruction?
Well, you offer your intelligence through study of the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam and whatever I've been emphasizing for the past 2 days, the Bhaktivedanta purports. Without those, we have no intelligence, but we take our knowledge from Bhaktivedanta purports. That's offering your intelligence. Offering what else? Organization. You act as a part of a bigger machine. You be submissive and stick to the principles. Chant 16 rounds and listen and do whatever you are instructed to do by your leaders in order to push on the movement. Not that you come up with some new scheme to spread Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada's already given the scheme, ISKCON. And now we have so many leaders, we have a GBC, we have temple presidents who are all committed to spreading the glories of Prabhupada and ISKCON in whatever way they can. And we just, whatever the GBC says, I do. We are servants. We don't oppose. Why? Why should I do that? And we just do. Prabhupada wanted this devotee to, he was his secretary, he wanted him to go back to his GBC post. This devotee didn't want, he was heartbroken. He was Prabhupada's secretary. So Prabhupada said, no, I don't want to go into who it was or anything like that. But Prabhupada said, no, you should go. Let us see what everyone else says. Kamal Krishna, yes, Prabhupada, he should go. Like we're going to say no, he shouldn't go. Prabhupada, Bhavanand, yes, Prabhupada, he should go. Jai Patak, yes, Prabhupada, he should go. Achyutananda, yes, Prabhupada. Bali Madan, yes, Prabhupada, he should go. Prabhupada says, see, the majority has ruled, you should go. You should just accept the majority and go and do what they say. So that's what we do. Of course, he was being kind. Yes, Mataji.
Hare Krishna. Prabhu, could you please explain what Srila Prabhupada meant when he said that every devotee should be independently thoughtful and responsible?
Yes, not only devotees should be independently thoughtful, but his desire was to develop a class of independently thoughtful men and women. That's a hard one, in conjunction with being submissive. Of course, if you see someone is preaching in a way, say giving a class, which is against the principles of Krishna consciousness, then as an independently thoughtful person, you should bring that person to. But independently thoughtful doesn't mean to act independently. That's the mistake some people make.
But it's not an easy one to combine.
Your Prabhupada has given us the most difficult job. And that job is, in the Kali Yuga, no one gets along. Everyone is fighting. Quarrel, the age of quarrel. Husbands and wives, children and parents, employees and employers. There's always, in Delhi, there's always a Zindabad. There's always someone protesting, isn't it, with placards and marches. So everyone is unhappy. Everyone is quarreling. And Prabhupada has asked us to do the one thing that is the most difficult thing: cooperate. It's very difficult, almost impossible, but we cooperate the best we can under and within the atmosphere of ISKCON and the temples that comprise ISKCON, where we all live together peacefully, relatively peacefully. There may be some little discord here and there, but in general, but it's not easy, very hard, because we all are proud of our own intelligence. But he's given us the most difficult task. But I would say, from what I see, it's a fairly successful. It's all going on. How many years? Almost 50, 49 years. 39 years after Prabhupada's disappearance. It's still going on. ISKCON's still going on. It's still growing. There are hundreds and hundreds of temples around the world. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of devotees. However, you shouldn't think that the job is done, because even the thousands and thousands of devotees and the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of temples is very insignificant in the general scheme of the whole world, which has 6 billion people. So we have to keep working and working and working until most of the world. Prabhupada said in one morning walk, he said, not everyone will become Krishna conscious. Not everyone. So you shouldn't think like that. But the intelligent class of people will become, if they become Krishna conscious, then the world will become peaceful. So we have to cooperate, which means that we do as we're told, but not like a dull donkey, but we understand that, yes, this is for the greater good, so I will cooperate. That's independently thoughtful, Mataji. When you do something knowing that it's for the greater good, so with your independently thoughtful intelligence, you cooperate, knowing that it's for the greater good. Any other questions? One more question, then we're finished for the year for me. Anyone?
When somebody complains to Prabhupada about another devotee, 3 times he complains. One devotee complains about another devotee 3 times. And Prabhupada told him, you just tolerate him just like I tolerate you.
Just.
I tolerate.
That word, I'm not.
Somebody complained about another devotee three times to Prabhupada, complained about another.
Right.
And Prabhupada told him the third time, you tolerate him.
Oh, tolerate
him, just like I tolerate him.
Yeah. Very good. You tolerate him like I tolerate you. As we were, you know, we might have gotten a little puffed up thinking, oh, we're all so great, but actually Prabhupada was, he had to tolerate so much, you know, tolerate so much from us, like I told you yesterday. I put vanilla in his milk. Did I tell you that story? Or maybe it was last night. The one time I cooked for Prabhupada in 1969, I didn't know how to cook, but somehow I ended up cooking. First, when I served him lunch, Prabhupada looked at the dal. He said, "What is that?" I said, "It's dal, Prabhupada." He said, "No turmeric?" I said, "Oh, I forgot." Prabhupada took his finger and he pushed the bowl of dal to the other side of the desk. And he ate, tolerated. If the cook says, "Oh, I forgot," who knows what you're about to eat? Do you know what I mean? And that night, Prabhupada would take milk with banana. And milk with sugar and banana. So I thought, I like vanilla. You know vanilla bean? Like vanilla ice cream? It's a vanilla bean. So I scraped, there was a vanilla bean there. I scraped the inside, put it in the milk, and brought it to a boil three times, served it to Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, "What are those black specks in the milk?" I said, "It's vanilla, Prabhupada." I was thinking, well, I like it. Prabhupada will like it. He drank it, but he said, "Don't do." He said, "Don't do." But he drank it. So he tolerated. And those are just minor things. He tolerated all of our nonsense, you know. Because he was kind and loving. And also, there's one thing that Prabhupada had that we should all develop. He appreciated that these mainly young men and women have come to help me spread this mission. Even though the lifestyle is very difficult, and they're coming from fairly well-to-do backgrounds. America, everyone was, you know, was the richest country in the world. He appreciated whatever service we gave. And similarly, we should appreciate each other and whatever service that other devotee is doing. If we appreciate... You're really stubborn, aren't you? I'm only teasing. If we appreciate what the others are doing, then there'll be no quarrel. That was one thing that I miss. Prabhupada always, anyone who did service, Prabhupada always managed to recognize that service and give his appreciation. So that's how you cooperate. By appreciating what someone else is doing. Do you agree? Huh?
Yes. He doesn't know what to think.
He doesn't know what he heard. He was asleep. I caught you. I see everything. Even these old eyes see everything. Okay, thank you very much. You've been very kind to me during my stay. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.